Thursday, the 7th of March. Good morning, kids, and welcome to Kids Corner here on Radio Veritas. Well, I wanted to pick up another book that I quite like and have us have a little read of it. So I've chosen a book by C.S. Lewis that he wrote for children called The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Now, C.S. Lewis is quite an interesting writer. He writes fantasy novels, but if you read them carefully, you will understand that he's talking about some of the important ideas of Christianity in them. So in his novels, there are all sorts of fantastical creatures that don't actually exist in the real world, like dragons and animals that talk and all sorts of crazy things. And what's interesting about his stories is that they involve children from our world who travel to Narnia, which is another world entirely. And all these strange things exist in Narnia that don't exist in our own world. And things can happen to people in Narnia that don't happen in our world. As it's Lent, I thought I would read you a little bit of a story about a little boy called Eustace. And Eustace is presented in the book as being quite a difficult little boy, the sort who might bully others at school. He's not very nice. Never mind, he gets dragged with his cousins into Narnia, and he doesn't enjoy the experience at all, and he's quite mean about it. And then they stop at an island, and they lose Eustace, and they can't find him anywhere, and they actually think he might have been eaten by a dragon. One morning, early, Edmund wakes up, just as they're about to leave the island and have decided they're never going to find Eustace again. And he goes for a walk, and he sees a figure. And as he gets near, the stranger said in a low voice, "Is that you, Edmund?" "Yes, who are you?" said he. "Don't you know me?" said the other. "It's me, Eustace." "By Jove," said Edmund, "so it is, my dear chap." "Hush," said Eustace, and he lurched as if he were going to fall. "Hello," said Edmund, steadying him. "What's up? Are you ill?" Eustace was so silent for so long that Edmund thought he was fainting, but at last he said, "It's been ghastly. You don't know, but it's all right now. Could we go and talk somewhere? I don't want to meet the others just yet." "Yes, rather, anywhere you like," said Edmund. "We can go and sit on the rocks over there. I say, I am glad to see you looking yourself again. You must have had a pretty beastly time." They went to the rocks and sat down looking out across the bay, while the sky got paler and paler and the stars disappeared, except for one very bright one, low down and near the horizon. "I won't tell you how I became a dragon till I can tell the others and get it all over," said Eustace. "By the way, I didn't even know it was a dragon until I heard you all using the word when I turned up here the other morning. I want to tell you how I stopped being one." "Firehead," said Edmund. "Well, last night I was more miserable than anything, and that beastly arm ring was hurting like anything." "Is that all right now?" Eustace laughed, a different laugh from any Edmund had ever heard him give before, and slipped the bracelet easily off his arm. "There it is," he said, "and anyone who likes can have it as far as I'm concerned. Well, as I was saying, I was lying awake and wondering what on earth would become of me. And then, but mind you, it might all have been a dream, I don't know." "Go on," said Edmund, with considerable patience. "Well, anyway, I looked up and saw the very last thing I expected, a huge lion coming slowly towards me. And one queer thing was that there was no moon last night, but there was moonlight where the lion was. And so it came nearer and nearer. I was terribly afraid of it. You may think that being a dragon, I could have knocked any lion out easily enough. But it wasn't that kind of fear. I wasn't afraid of eating me. I was just afraid of it, if you can understand. Well, it came close up to me and looked straight in my eye, and I shut my eyes tight. But that wasn't any good because it told me to follow it."
"You mean it spoke?"
"I don't know, now that you mention it. I don't think it did, but it told me all the same, and I knew I'd have to do what it told me, so I got up and followed it. And it led me a long way into the mountains. And there was always this moonlight over and round the lion wherever we went. So at last we came to the top of a mountain I'd never seen before.
And on top of this mountain, there was a garden, trees and fruit and everything. And in the middle of it, there was a well. I knew it was a well because you could see the water bubbling up from the bottom of it. But it was a lot bigger than most wells, like a very big round bath with marble steps going down into it. The water was as clear as anything. And I thought if I could get in there and bathe, it would ease the pain in my leg. But the lion told me I must undress first. Mind you, I don't know if he said any words out loud or not. I was just going to say that I couldn't undress because I hadn't any clothes on, when I suddenly thought that dragons are snaky sort of things and snakes can cast their skins. Oh, of course, thought I, that's what the lion means. So I started scratching myself and my scales began coming off all over the place. And then I scratched a little deeper and instead of just scales coming off here and there, my whole skin started peeling off beautifully, like it does after an illness or as if I was a banana. In a minute or two, I just stepped right out of it. I could see it lying there beside me, looking nasty. It was a most lovely feeling, so I started to go down into the well for my bathe. But just as I was going to put my feet into the water, I looked down and saw that they were all hard and rough and wrinkled and scaly, just like they had been before. Oh, that's all right, said I. It only means I had another smaller suit on underneath the first one, and I'll have to get out of it too. So I scratched and tore again, and this underskin peeled off beautifully. And out I stepped and left it lying beside the other one and went down to the well for my bathe. Well, exactly the same thing happened again. And I thought to myself, oh dear, however many skins have I got to take off? For I was longing to bathe my leg. So I scratched away for the third time and got off a third skin, just like the two others, and stepped out of it. But as soon as I looked at myself in the water, I knew it had been no good. Then the lion said, but I don't know if it spoke, you will have to let me undress you. I was afraid of his claws, I can tell you, but I was pretty nearly desperate now, so I just lay flat down on my back to let him do it. The very first tear he made was so deep that I thought it had gone right into my heart, and when he began pulling the skin off, it hurt worse than anything I've ever felt. The only thing that made me able to bear it was just the pleasure of feeling the stuff peel off. You know, if you've ever picked the scab off a sore place, it hurts, but it is such fun to see it coming away. I know exactly what you mean, said Edmund. Well, he peeled the beastly stuff right off, just as I thought I'd done it myself the other three times, only they hadn't hurt. And there it was, lying on the grass, only ever so much thicker and darker and more knobbly looking than the others had been. And there was I, as smooth and as soft as a peeled switch and smaller than I had been. Then he caught hold of me. I didn't like that very much, for I was very tender underneath now that I had no skin on. And he threw me into the water. It smarted like anything, but only for a moment. And after that, it became perfectly delicious. And as soon as I started swimming and splashing, I found that all the pain had gone from my arm. And then I saw why. I turned into a boy again. You'd think me simply phony if I told you how I felt about my own arms. I know they've no muscle and are pretty mouldy compared with Caspian's, but I was so glad to see them. After a bit, the lion took me out and dressed me. Dressed you? With his paws? Asked Edmund. Well, I don't exactly remember that bit, but he did, somehow or other, in new clothes, the same that I've got on at the moment, as a matter of fact. Then suddenly I was back here, which makes me think it must have been a dream. No, it wasn't a dream, said Edmund. Why not? Well, there are the clothes, for one thing, and you have been, well, undragoned for another. What do you think it was, then? Asked Eustace. I think you've seen Aslan, said Edmund. Aslan, said Eustace. I've heard that name mentioned several times since we joined the Drawn Treader, and I felt, I don't know what, I hated it, but I was hating everything then. And by the way, I'd like to apologize. I'm afraid I've been pretty beastly. Well, that's all right, said Edmund. Between ourselves, you haven't been as bad as I was on my first trip to Narnia. You were only an ass, but I was a traitor. Well, don't tell me about it then, said Eustace. So, I'm going to pause there. I rather like this story. It's a redemption story, in which we hear about a little boy who is quite selfish and who has an experience that helps him change. And that's why I like it, because I think it's important that we are allowed to change and that we learn through stories and through life experience that getting things wrong and messing up happens to everyone. I think my favorite part of the story is that when he apologizes at the end to Edmund and tells him that he's sorry that he's been beastly, Edmund tells him something equally important. He tells him about how he also wasn't everything he wanted to be and how he also messed up. That's something that I think is really, really important, that we recognize that all of us have moments of failure. We get things wrong and we hurt other people. But God always gives us second chances. Let's close our eyes now. Let's ask God to help us to recognize in ourselves things we need to be sorry for. And let's thank God for giving us a second chance to make our lives different and to live today differently and better. Amen. Thank you.